You are listening to the Post Atomic Horror Podcast with Ron Algar Watt and Matt Robotham. Episode 108, covering Unification, Parts 1 and 2, with Rob Humphreys.
Hi, friends. We're back, and it is Spock time.
It is about time. God, it's been a long wait.
Yeah, well, yes and no. I mean, I feel like they kind of blew their wad on the original series stuff with the naked now.
Yeah.
And I feel like they had to wait a while. But by the way, Beef's here.
Oh, hey.
Sorry, Beef.
Terribly rude of me.
Indeed I am.
But I feel like they needed to distance themselves for a while. And season 5 is a good time to say, hey, here's Spock.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you had mentioned it would have been great if they hadn't told you.
Yeah, no, that would have been awesome.
But I remember the promo at the time. And the promo was these letters flying up to the screen. S-P-O-C-K! Exclamation point! Like, okay, that's surprising no one.
I would have
Do you
loved
like
it
a good
if...
surprise? Tough.
Yeah, yeah too
I would
bad.
Have loved it if Star Trek announcer guy had, like, yelled them as they came out. S. P. Oh.
S-S-S-S-P-P-P-P-O-O-O-O.
The next episode of Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Ambassador
Spock is a murderer.
That's all.
That's it. I'm
out. Just a murder. All right, Matt, why don't you tell us about Unification Part 1?
All right.
Or
so
Unification
Picard is contacted by some sort of admiral, telling him that a rather well-known Starfleet ambassador has gone missing on Romulus. Maybe you've heard of him. It's fucking Spock! With the possibility that Spock may have defected to the Romulans, Picard takes the Enterprise to Vulcan to meet with Sarek in a scene that I refuse to mock because it's absolutely tragic. Sarek tells Picard of a Romulan senator named Pardok, known for his attempts to bring peace to Romulus, and Picard and Data hitch a ride on a borrowed Klingon bird of prey, not the Bounty, alas, while Riker and the crew travel to a Starfleet junkyard hoping to find information on a destroyed Ferengi vessel with Vulcan parts that have been discovered there. There they encounter a melty-faced alien who runs the junkyard, and using Counselor Troi's great skills, they get him to help them. What's that? Oh, she finally used her psychic powers and her knowledge of psychology to help them out? Oh, don't be stupid, she just jiggled her tits at him. Anyway, Melty Man takes them to the decommissioned Vulcan ship that has the parts, but they find it gone. Melty Man then takes them to another ship in the yard that's received one of the parts from the Vulcan ship, but it's gone too. Suddenly, a heavily armed warship arrives to pick up the supplies that Melty Man had been unwittingly beaming to the ship that he thought was there. Ship opens fires on the Enterprise, and Worf accidentally blows it up. Nice. We give you one job, Worf, you know, and just... Anyway. Meanwhile, Picard and Data arrive on Romulus, disguised as Romulans. They are captured almost instantly, barely having time to enjoy the traditional Romulan soup bar. Romulan guards take them into a smelly basement, where they encounter Pardok. Oh, and Spock's there, too! Brain and all.
Brain and brain? What is brain? Okay, two quick points about that.
Yes.
One, they are all about soup on
Romulus. Oh my
Romulus.
God. I had no idea. Like, I've been a Trek fan for a long time. I had no idea Romulans were so into potato soup.
They are noted soup enthusiasts. Yes. Who doesn't love a good soup? No one, apparently.
Yeah.
Right.
Not tomato soup, because they don't have the facilities to make the grilled cheese.
Right, and you can't...
Tomato soup's not good.
It is with grilled cheese.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you, man? You don't like raisins either.
I mean, a lot,
you
but
just,
not this.
You must have been a terrible kid. And the other quick point I wanted to make is you focus way more on Melty Man than you do on, like, all the other major characters.
He was kind of my favorite character in this episode.
Well, let's just roll into your good thing, then.
All right. Everyone is so completely on in this episode. You know, Picard's badass as usual. Riker's awesome. Troi is very, very pretty in this episode.
Yes, she is.
Picking a particular good thing is tough, but man, I really kind of liked Melty Man. For a tiny little asshole with a scrap of power, he goes from useless to extremely helpful very quickly. And when everything starts going wrong, he kind of goes completely all business. I love his... When the ships are missing, he just sits down and is like, okay, I'm going to find these for you because I am better than this. I like that guy.
He reminds me of a lot of bureaucrats I've known and worked with over the years. He's very believable. He sort of grounds things in reality because he's a very, you know, very believable character.
Yeah. I also like they basically bring Troi out to entice him to do their bidding. And he sees through it immediately. He's like, "Oh, so you're the attractive woman they decided to trot out to get me to do their business to do this for them, huh?" It's working. Let's get to work.
Yeah, they probably think that this is going to work. They're probably right. That might have been what I would have picked as a quote.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. And as Beef pointed out, if they had him in the new movie, he'd probably be played by John Malkovich.
Yeah, he had a very John Malkovich look about him.
Yeah, and delivery. His delivery was that, "I'm almost falling asleep. I'm so disinterested."
Mm-hmm. Right. I think the correct term is Malkovichian.
Yeah, until shit goes wrong and then he freaks out.
Right.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm not
raises his voice
out.
A little.
Oh, that seems about right.
Yeah.
So your bad thing, Matt?
I spent the entire episode waiting for Spock to show up so I could use his dialogue as a quote, and then he showed up and said, "Hello. Damn it, Spock. We haven't seen you in forever. Get a better entrance line." No,
I think the point of that was they only had Nimoy for one episode and they wanted to get all the terrible getting there out of the way.
Now, my actual bad thing, though, this is a really small thing in a scene that I loved. But Sarek goes from rambling and sick and just completely out of it to completely coherent way too quickly for me. Like, I mean, it works. You need it to work that way for the episode, but it's a little distracting. Of course, then he forgets what he and Picard are doing and talking about, and I remember my grandpa, and I get completely depressed, and let's move on.
Yeah. That is seriously one of the just most soul-crushing things in Star Trek. And Star Trek occasionally has made us particularly emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but the bit at the end there, where he's trying to do the fingers parted Vulcan salute,
the Vulcan hand sign, and Picard
and he can't get his fingers right, and Picard just very oh god.
Yeah, we all made comments in our notes that it was either dusty or we just couldn't make any jokes at that point.
No, Picard very gently helps him.
Yeah.
Like he knows this guy needs to keep his dignity, and he doesn't want to make a show of it. And he doesn't even remember "Live Long and Prosper." He's like, "Live Long and Picard just sort of finishes it for him.
Yeah, it's just utterly brutal.
Yep. Well, it's really well written. It's really well performed by Mark Lenard. And it's also like Patrick Stewart plays it perfectly too. Because the person he reacts off of is almost just as important in that scene.
Yeah.
And just we've mentioned this before. He's always been this background guy. And it's great that he's now getting something dramatically to do on a show that wasn't even his show.
Yeah.
And they gave him a nice little storyline, and you really see that he was a great actor. And the fact that he was willing to stand in the background and have two or three lines, and when he had all this talent,
yeah,
I think is a real testament to what a pro he was.
Yeah, no, yeah, TNG absolutely. Just really, really became his sort of reward for doing that over the, like, "We're going to give you this character, this great character, and we're going to give you some amazing scenes with him."
Right. No, definitely. Definitely fantastic. And this really, part one was really the Sarek episode.
Yeah.
And I remember watching this at the time and like, okay, Spock, great. Ooh, they got Sarek too?
Ooh.
And I know he's not as difficult to get, but it was still like, it was a double punch and they didn't tell you he was going to be in it.
No, that's true.
So it was like, okay, this is a nice treat.
Mm-hmm.
It would be like, you know, if Kirk showed up, but then also Scotty showed up.
Yes.
Like, okay, well, he's a lesser guy, but he's still very cool.
And
this
they didn't
great.
Talk about Scotty showing up.
And I really do think, the Sarek-Picard bond, that tie, is just one of the most important things. It's a super important next-gen thing, and it's a super important tie to the old series. And I've said before, it brings it together in a way that doesn't step on any character's toes. It doesn't use somebody that was going to be used for something else. But it's an important tie to a very important character, for Spock, from the original series, but it does it in a way that isn't straightforward, and it even puts Picard in a weird situation against Spock, when he finally does meet him.
Mm-hmm.
And he meets this legendary guy, and he's got to, first I got to tell you your dad's dead, and then I got to, basically,
gotta
I'm carrying your dad's
then
sort of
dad's
friction with you in my head, so,
yeah.
No, and I like, it's really hard when you do an episode like this to not contrive a reason to bring Spock into it. And because there's this deep connection, like you said, because they have Sarek in common, it felt way more natural than, as much as I defend Generations, really, bringing Kirk and Picard together there was very contrived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a smart way.
Yeah, whereas Bones sending the Enterprise off, that made sense. Scotty doing weird engineering stuff to show up, that made sense. Yep. And this did too, and I like that. I like that they knew this was important and they didn't want to,
Yeah.
Fumble it.
And I get impatient in this because I wanted Spock to get there, and I wanted more
right.
of him.
Spock now.
But what you're saying is, I think, is right. I mean, it was good to pace it this way, and you get...
Well, that way you get a full episode with him without all the getting there.
Yeah. No, Spock should not be the fireworks factory.
Right. So your bad thing? Beef?
Oh, me? Oh, sorry, I didn't cover... Do you want me to say my good thing, too?
Oh, sorry, yes. Good thing first, then bad thing.
I know, I kind of blurred it by talking so much. Picard's my good thing. We get Picard comforting a sad old man he's close to. We get Picard owning the Klingons, as always.
I really
love that guy. The bad thing is tough for me. That's what I was saying. I didn't want to say it was slow because it wasn't slow. Tons and tons of stuff happened, but it was kind of subdued, and it was a lot of setup. It was a lot of important setup, but it was still setup. And part of me, part of me does want to get to the fireworks factory. But we know immediately that it's about Spock, and I could have used two full-on Spock episodes with extra Spock on the side, but I do understand why it was done the way it was.
Yeah, but you're right. On the other hand, on the other hand, the title comes up and it's like part one. You're like, ooh, we get a whole hour of Spock. No, you don't.
No.
Oh. And it turns out to be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
but you're not wrong. There are a lot of quiet sort of moments in this.
They're not boring, but they are quiet.
Not at all.
So when you think about it, like when I thought about it from a distance after watching, I'm thinking about it, it's like, I don't know, that not much happened, but it's like, you know, a lot happened. It was just, it wasn't excitement. It was foundational, and it was character. You know, parts of it were really important character stuff. But it's easy to slip into thinking that it's not exciting.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before. We like it when the show just does character stuff if it's well done. We don't care if there's, you know, mortal danger all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that there was a lot of action. I mean, there was the supply ship blowing up, but we didn't even know who was on that.
That was not great action either.
No. But, I mean, there's not a lot of fighting. There's not a lot of, you know, being in mortal danger. It's all character stuff. Mm-hmm. And that is much what I prefer. You know, you don't have to have a virus attacking the Enterprise or a space monster or whatever. Those can be good episodes too, but if you're doing character stuff, just do the character stuff.
Yeah.
It can stand on its own, and this really shows that. My good thing, which I'm actually remembering the right order now because, you know, I'm a competent host despite outward appearances.
That's okay, Alex. I don't think we've ever done this before.
No. I mean, certainly not 107 times before. I don't actually mind Spock doesn't show up until the end, like I was saying, but in addition to it being set up, you get this sort of big adventure. You get this, they're exploring, like, you get stuff with the Klingons, you get to go to Vulcan, you get to go to the Romulan homeworld, you get to see this bureaucrat off in this forgotten corner. I mean, it has the sort of epic scope of a movie. You got all the main races, you got a lot of important locations, and for a TV budget, they did the best that they could, and, you know, you got a lot of different aliens, you got a lot of different locations, and it felt like a big, you know, the big story that Spock demanded.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that. I've always liked that about this episode, is you don't really get any other episode where you're kind of exploring the whole fully formed universe of Star Trek, and I really like that.
Now, this really sort of jumps full into this is Star Trek.
Yeah, absolutely. Part two I don't feel does, but we'll get there in a minute. On the other hand, my bad thing, I don't know. It was really hard. This is fantastic.
This is a great episode.
I guess I'm going to go with the horrible stock footage explosion in the shipyard, because they're chasing this the guy who's, you know, weapons ship who's stealing stuff from the junkyard, and they hit it once, like Matt said, and it blows up. And then they cut to like this stock explosion. I think iMovie now has a better explosion effect.
Like, we've seen that stock explosion in every Star Trek movie since the motion picture.
Yeah. It was not good. And it was clearly they were cutting away to like an alternate dimension where this explosion was happening. That was not great. Troy having to be the pretty girl and batter eyelashes to distract the jerk was kind of irritating. But you know what? I give up. I fucking do what you want, Deanna. I don't even care anymore.
She was very pretty at being.
She was very pretty. I like that.
So that's where we stand on this now. Well, forget her doing her job. At least she's pretty.
Right. She is very pretty.
We're just going completely superficial with her. Yeah. None of the deep character stuff.
I mean,
her.
Yes, she's a Star Trek officer, but she's also a woman. So, she needs to get that objectification in somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Listen,
well,
that's fine.
When she wants to start being useful, we'll start treating her as useful.
But, you know, when we get to DS9, you get Dax, who is both, who is crazy hot and also very useful.
Amazing.
Yes, but not so much here. You know what? So what? Fine, I give up, like I
Really
said.
cute, though, and gigantic eyes.
Oh, totally. She's got, like, the deer eyes going on there.
Yeah.
No, she's... Definitely. Okay, so it opens with the title card. As we go forward in real-time production-wise, Gene Roddenberry has now passed away. And there's a nice sort of classy title card that's, you know, just says Gene Roddenberry, 1921 to 1991 or whatever it was. And, you know, he may have had some really stupid ideas about what made TV drama, but, you know, there wouldn't be Star Trek without him. So just for once, Matt, shut up and, you know, bow your head and pretend to be serious.
Hey, listen, I didn't say anything for this one.
I know. And going forward, he won't have any more influence. So I think we're done with that. I know there's some people who are sort of uncomfortable with that, and I think, you know,
the end.
I think we're done now.
Of that, the end.
Oh, yes, exactly. And it is interesting and definitely noticeable that the shows take on a different tone.
Yeah.
With him gone.
And I feel like it's a necessary tone.
I think so. Yep. But again, you know, it is too bad that the franchise was just hitting its peak success-wise.
Yeah.
Like, they were still making movies and this show, and they were preparing a spinoff. Like, it was at its peak.
Yeah.
And the dude dropped dead without really seeing that completely happen. And that sucks.
Yeah.
But, you know, so much going on in this episode, we probably shouldn't dwell on that too much.
Let's see.
We had the Klingon captain was fantastic. He was trying to intimidate Picard, and Picard was just having none of it.
Oh my God, Picard is so great in that. Like,
Beav, you mentioned that in your good thing. Do you wanna?
Yeah, he owns Klingons. He just the Klingons have marginalized the role of the Federation.
And, yeah,
their Civil War thing, and Gowron taking
power. They didn't do anything.
And Picard just slides in and you know, reminds him that you know, he is kind of beholden to him for his part in everything, and that, you know, he could take his Federation toys elsewhere if need be.
Right, and if there's some other house that requires our... Yeah,
it's beautiful.
Yeah, it is. In fact, Matt, that was that your quote?
Yes. You can play that now.
Sorry.
Yeah, let's just go ahead and drop that here.
How would it benefit the Klingon Empire? I'm sure Garon will ask.
The only benefit to the Klingon Empire would be our gratitude.
That is what you want me to tell him?
Yes. And please add that if he is unable to provide us with a ship, then I am sure there are others in the Klingon Empire who would be willing to help me. And then they would have our gratitude.
I see.
Also, please tell Gowron that I am immensely gratified that he is prospering so well. A tribute to his skilled leadership.
That whole scene was fantastic. But then on the Klingon ship itself, when they're going to Romulus, they need a cloaked ship. And the Klingon dude, who incidentally is played by Stephen Root.
Yes.
Who noted chameleonic character actor Stephen Root. Who's like, whoa, it's that guy.
You may remember him from virtually everything.
Yes.
Every comedy from the 90s, basically. Yep.
Yeah, knowing that, I was staring at him the whole time trying to get the Stephen Root out of it, and I just couldn't. There was one scene where his voice went a little bit higher when he was talking, and you could almost hear his actual voice. In it, but it was a good, really good job by him. It's weird.
Yeah, absolutely. And he keeps trying to. My read on the character was he kept trying to intimidate Picard. He's going out of his way to make him uncomfortable. Just
here,
you know,
this is something Klingon that you don't like. Oh, I love that.
Yep. And he did it over and over again. He's like, "We sleep on hard beds. We don't have your mattresses. We sleep like this.
You're gonna sleep like, Klingon style." which cued a YouTube Klingon style, Gangnam style video, I'm sure, right there for him to...
Quite probably, yes.
Reference.
I still don't know what that is because I'm an old man and I'm out of touch.
It's Korean, which is another group of people that start with a K.
Oh, well, there you go.
So it's similar.
There's your connection right there. Connection with a K. But he keeps trying to intimidate him, and he's having none of it. And He's like, well, we don't have human food here. We have gach. And Picard's like, good. I love gach.
Very fresh.
Having none of it.
Which doesn't make much sense, but fine.
No. But Patrick Stewart plays that really well, yes. too. He's like, I don't have time for you. Yes, fine. I'm intimidated. Now go away.
I have to be creeped out by Data staring at me all night.
Oh, God, that scene. You guys want to talk about that?
Sure. It's a great little bit when they're in the... when they're in the bedroom together, with no bed, the shelf room. And Picard obviously is a person who sleeps, and Data obviously is a person who doesn't. And it's funny to see how uncomfortable Picard is just with the idea of Data standing in there. And it may just be because he doesn't have his gym jams and his comfy bed, but it's a great interaction between them. And ultimately, he skips sleeping entirely.
Yeah, fuck it, I can't do this. Fine.
I love him trying to lay down and go to sleep with this dude just standing in the middle of the room.
Yeah.
And at first he's just standing there, then he just starts staring at Picard.
Right. No, it is a fantastic, and the thing is, it felt kind of like padding as far as pacing goes, but it was so good it didn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, come on, let's move it, let's go. But no, you know what? This is great. I like this. Because Picard is clearly out of his comfort zone. He won't show it in front of the Klingons. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't care in front of Data. He's like, oh, stop. Just stop. Come on. I love that. The Sarek stuff was just brutal.
Yep.
His horrible wife.
Oh, my God. Perrin is not... I really got the vibe off... First of all, she spends, like, 10 minutes saying how awful Spock is, which you're not going to win that argument, honey.
No, but... And that is good writing as far as someone who's married into a family and doesn't get how the family works at all. Like, it makes us just want to hate her.
Mm-hmm. And
she's new mommy, and she's like, well, he's a jerk. Well, Sarek doesn't care, but I care. Like, shut up, lady.
Yeah, calm down. They got enough crap to deal with right now.
Yeah.
And also got the vibe off of her that she wasn't handling his illness very well.
Yeah, it could be that she's been dealing with it for years and she just lost her patience, or it could just be she sucks at it.
Yeah, which, I mean, again, both completely legitimate characters.
Yeah, they're real things, real ways of reacting to stuff. And that one makes her a little more sympathetic than I want her to be. I want to think that she's just a bitch who doesn't like that Sarek sometimes thinks about his kid instead of her.
Right. Why aren't you thinking about me? Miles!
Yeah. But I mean, and you can't help but compare her, if you've been with the show the whole time, to Spock's mom, who would have totally been the intermediary there. Mm. Things between Spock and Sarek wouldn't have gone nearly this far with her around, because she would have stepped in and said, okay, guys, let's, you know, everything's fine. You both love me, right? Okay, common ground. Let's go from there.
Yep.
But not so much. And really, the whole daddy issues thing. Just a couple of times throughout getting there, like Picard says to Riker, and I think it comes up another time, they just say fathers and sons.
Yeah, I know. I love Riker's. Yeah, I get it. Trust me.
And they just exchange a glance, and it happens again, and I can't remember between who.
Yeah.
But it's just a great, we all know.
Yeah. No, and those two also just huge daddy issues, so.
Yep. Most characters in genre fiction in general, most male characters have daddy issues, and I think that's because most writers have daddy issues.
Yep.
And it just comes through. It's like how writers are always writing about writers.
Yep.
It's the same kind of thing. What else?
Let's see.
Really, the meat of what we have to talk about, I think, is in part two. I just want to make sure we cover everything in this one before we move on. Oh, I really like that, Matt, you didn't at first, but I think I may have won you over on this. I like that Sarek died off screen.
Yeah, at first I thought, well, you know, this guy's a big deal. You know, we should really have seen him die, but then it's like... no.
My thought was, I don't want that cliched scene of him saying his last words to Picard and then dying. I hate that. It is so overdone. And it seems more realistic to me that you're off doing something else and someone just hands you a thing that says your friend is dead. It's like, oh, Jesus. I wasn't ready for that.
No. I just saw him. He looked...
Yeah.
Well, terrible, so...
Right. What else?
Shitty stuff. We got that.
Any other major points?
Zach Dorn. The Melting Men.
No, I think we covered this episode. I keep thinking that I'm going to start talking about something that's going to be the next episode, like the thing I like is actually in the next episode versus the first episode.
I had some problems with that myself just because I've seen these a few times and they sort of blend together. I was almost going to say meld together in my head.
Yeah.
But ooh.
Thankfully, I didn't say that because that's terrible.
Yeah, it would be horrible if you said that.
Right. All right, well, let's then push forward to Unification Part 2.
Okay. Leaping into my summary.
Yes, please.
Get him, Beef.
After finding Spock using elaborate disguises and borrowed Klingon ships, Spock scolds Picard for being there, the city of Rebel Caverns, Romulus. Just a quick side note here. If you are a space despot or the leader of an oppressive society, fill in the caves. Just go ahead, fill in the caves. First rule of business, fill in the caves. If you don't fill in the caves, you know the lighting level is going to get to a certain point, and just like in Minecraft, rebels or dissenters are going to spawn right behind you, and boom. Okay. So, getting back to what I actually wrote. And they immediately resume the father-son enmity that Spock and Sarek had enjoyed so well. At this point, the opening credits appear, and they are the only part of the episode that really seems to do anything of any import. Data is on the Klingon ship, and he handles the Klingons like they need to be handled. Spock and Picard talk politics, and Pardak arrives to take us to the next setting. Spock seems suspicious of the whole thing the entire time. Everyone seems kind of suspicious the entire time. Riker goes to a bar to talk about music, smuggling deals gone wrong, and Worf shows up to sing karaoke so that Lauren can tell him his future. Meanwhile, Spock goes with Pardak to see the proconsul, and Sela jumps out of the toilet as soon as they leave. I don't think she washed her hands. Maybe she'll die of cholera. Spock goes back to the caves, and everyone is really skeptical except a handful of the Romulans. I think these are the caves beneath the Romulan mental hospital. Spock tells Picard that Picard isn't his father, and then runs crying to his room and slams the door. Back on the ship, Picard goes to take his ears off so Spock and Data can dish about him behind his back. Data and Spock go back and forth about how the other is squandering exactly what they themselves long for. They then switch brains, and the all-ages romp, Fascinating Friday, begins. The end. Okay, not really. Back at the bar, Worf gets his Klingon opera on, as I said. Food is thrown, and some answers are gathered through the intimidation of a fat Ferengi. After no mystery or suspense whatsoever, everyone on the side of the good guys is pretty sure the Romulans are up to something, and they are, and the good guys win. And Spock stays on Romulus, where he has volunteered to personally sit on the big wooden chest they've locked Sela in to make sure that she never gets out again, because he is a hero and heroes make sacrifices.
That's great.
Yeah. I think the saddest part about this whole storyline, like you said, of no import, the next we hear from Spock is in the 2009 movie. Mm. He's been on Romulus for 20 years, and then the planet blows up and he goes back in time.
Yeah. So that worked out.
Yeah. So none of this ended up mattering at all.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate. Yeah. So your good thing?
But at least Sela was probably on the planet when it blew up.
One hopes.
My good thing is I really liked a lot of the pieces of this. I like Picard and Spock and Data, and Riker channeling Kirk, or Rykirk as he's widely known.
Oh.
He seduces the four-armed cantina lady, strong-arms somebody. Riker may actually be my good thing. This surprises me, too. He gets some good opportunities in this episode. He shows his leadership and insight. He shows how well he works with Picard. Even when Picard isn't there, he shows just how much knowledge he has of his captain and methods and whatnot. Yep. Good job, Riker. An episode where this thing, where the good thing probably should be the appearance of one of the most beloved iconic figures in television. It's you, Guy.
Yeah, you would not think that he would be the strength, and he's not the entire strength of the episode.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I've said before, Frakes' acting has been my thing, but in this, it's really Riker rather than Frakes. It's,
oh, there's,
you know,
some great
the
writing
stuff
there,
they gave,
but
the writing that they did. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think there must have been a dedicated effort to that, because it's like, okay, all the meat of this is Picard and Data and Spock. We got to give the other guys something to do. Yeah. And they probably spent extra effort to make sure that it was worth watching, and it really comes through.
But he's really Kirky, and it really shows his, you know, it's been said before, his similarity to Kirk in the show, where he's not the main guy, but he is kind of the Kirkest of them. And he gets to do all of that stuff and just really, really shows all the stuff he likes to do. He even does music in it.
Yep. He gets a chance, and not the trombone as usual, but he sidles up to a piano, which is nice. And I've said this a million times, and I will always say this: I love watching him do his thing with ladies.
Yep.
Yeah.
I love seeing him lay on the charm, and, you know, flash him the smile, and, you know, I think it's great. And yeah, I got a crush on him. I'm not.
And this is
that.
Not the usual lady that he would charm.
No, it is not.
No, we'll get to that in a second.
She, but she still comes off as sexy and interesting, and he comes off as interested. I mean, he doesn't look like he's scamming her. They genuinely have banter, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it feels like he's gonna go back there later.
Could be.
Hey, how's it going?
He's probably got a bingo card, and you know that would be a great thing to check off the list.
I would assume that she would be count as the free space.
No, Troy's the free space.
I think that thing in the middle of her nose is the free space.
Ugh. I don't know what that is.
Yeah. And your bad thing?
Let's see. My bad thing is how inconsequential every bit of all of this is. Yeah. It's a two-parter with spa mother humping in it, and it leaves you shrugging.
Yeah, you got the Romulan invasion force of three ships.
Three ships. They're great. They're great plan.
Yeah, my big thing
And their fighter is bigger than the Klingon ships. I mean, than the Vulcan ships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not even huge ships, and there doesn't seem to be any support for an invasion. You can't just ship people over to a place and to a planet and call it an invasion.
No, and my thought was, isn't Vulcan pretty deep in Federation territory? It's not like on the border. It's like there.
Like, it's pretty close to Earth as far as I know.
I thought so. I mean, they're deliberately vague with where stuff is, and that's probably a good idea.
And at some point in that during that trip, they would either get wise or they could have other ships come over. I mean, you know, the Federation can send ships there and have people on the ground, and there would be resistance. Mm-hmm.
That's my point. If it's in the middle, wouldn't that effectively be like trying to conquer America by taking Chicago first? Like,
yeah,
that's not you're surrounded.
It would be like
by
Red Dawn attacking the middle of whatever the Midwest or
right.
Dad, don't make me think about Red Dawn.
Sorry.
Didn't they recently remake that?
Yes,
I think so.
Yeah, we don't need to. We got enough disappointment to talk about here. We don't need to talk about that. Matt, your good thing.
Yeah. So the final scene when Spock melds with Picard to finally know his father it's just such a perfect end to that character and his arc with his, like, you know, and the arc that he and Sarek have had over these two series.
Mm-hmm. No,
it's such a beautiful moment. Like, it totally makes up for my, you know, not being terribly fond with Sarek dying off camera.
I mentioned this in Journey to Babel when Sarek first showed up. I said, this is one of my favorite relationships in all of Star Trek, because it's a father-son thing, and a lot of us can relate to that. And it's written so well because they have sort of ups and downs, and you get the idea that Spock became an ambassador specifically to impress his dad.
Yeah,
he would never say that because he's a Vulcan, but you know that's why he did that.
Yeah, no, he and I mean, like, his thing was always science,
right? And we'll get to that in a second too.
Approved of,
but I get the feeling he said, okay, I had a fulfilling career doing that. Now I'm going to do this because, you know, I want to make Daddy proud. And it feels like he never quite did.
No.
But I don't know. There's also a great bit where Picard shows up and said he was a great man. And Spock's answer to that is, well, he was a great ambassador. The implication being, well, he was a terrible father. He was good at his job, sure.
Well, yeah, he was punctual.
You can be two things.
Right. No, I quite like that. And your bad thing?
The piano playing lady in the bar is completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, we never get aliens this goofy.
No.
She looks like she escaped from the Mos Eisley Cantina, but the Mos Eisley Cantina from the Star Wars Holiday Special. Like, she should be providing backup for B. Arthur.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because I actually kind of like that character.
Yeah, like we talked about, they had good chemistry. There was some nice back and forth there. But yeah, the alien design of her Babylon,
like,
5 bad.
She is a large woman in a poncho with, four arms.
Which doesn't make a lick of sense.
No.
Unless you're Grimace.
Yes. One giant nostril right in the middle of her face.
Yeah.
Which makes me feel like if she sneezed, it would be a tidal wave. And, like, my favorite Martian-style antenna.
Well, my favorite Martian-style antenna on top of a giant afro.
Yeah.
It's like, they made all these Klingons and Romulans and everything, and they basically used up all the makeup budget, and they just fished through the makeup department. Okay, we got this, we got that, just throw it all together.
The parts box.
Right.
She looks like your fourth grade teacher at a Halloween party.
Yes, she does. Now, here is the challenge for any attendee of a Star Trek convention. Go as a sexy version of her.
The gauntlet has been thrown.
Yes. I would love to see, yeah, like, when we do our event at Emerald City this year, some of us are going to be wearing Trek costumes. I challenge one of our female friends who will be there,
mm-hmm,
to dress up as this chick. I will give you a dollar.
Yes.
One of Matt's dollars.
Yes.
Which you won't be able to spend anywhere.
A gold doubloon.
Yes.
But the character, I like the character.
Yes.
And I like the actress in it. I mean, she delivers, mm-hmm, it great. I mean, she does her lines in a way that actually, like I said sexy. It's a, you know, the costume is ridiculous, but the delivery and all was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost sort of moonlighting banter, that quick back and forth.
Yeah. Yep.
We're I got business here. I need to get information. But on the other hand, we're obviously flirting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a nice,
I consider these awful bars are the Star Wars brand cantina franchises across the known space.
Let's just say she's no Figrin Dane in the modal nodes.
That is the best note I have ever seen you make, by the way. Before the show, we sometimes go through each other's, okay, he's going to talk about this, so I'll prepare this or whatever. And I saw that, and I was like, Matt, this is, oh my God, you nerd. I love you, man. No, that was great. I feel like Star Trek has tried so many times to do the Star Wars cantina scene, and it has, mm-hmm, failed every time.
Yeah.
Until we get to Quark's bar, they keep trying and they keep failing.
Yeah, I think a bar in Star Trek is always going to be more like the garbage scowl when where all the people are in the bar. You know, that seems like a fleet bar, you know, like a place where,
yeah, like the officers club,
people are hanging around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I don't see it as a Star Wars cantina kind of thing. And even,
but they always try that.
Quarks,
they always try
Quarks
to have
does it
different...
pretty well, doesn't it?
What's that?
Quarks.
Yeah, because I think they made a concerted effort. Okay, we're a weekly show. Everyone's sort of stationary. They're not going anywhere. So they can do really good alien designs of guys that are always going to be there. They don't have to keep inventing new guys every week.
Mourn.
Yes.
That show always perfects so many things.
It does.
Yeah.
I'm glad we got you on board with that.
Yeah, you did. I'm in the second season. It's great.
Mm,
I'm consistently surprised that we have to convince anyone that Deep Space Nine is awesome.
No, it was a tough call for me back in the day because it's like, I don't know, there's no ship, and I don't care about any of these guys. And
there's baseball.
Oh, there was baseball.
It's really baseball.
Yeah. And Avery Brooks is kind of weird in it. I mean, his acting is really odd. It works, but it's odd.
I can't believe you don't like his acting.
Woo!
I think having that pointed out to me is going to make it more difficult for me to take him seriously. Okay, guys, you know what? We're talking about Sisko in an episode where Spock showed up. What the fuck?
An episode where we're on a time clock.
Okay, so my good thing is actually also Beef's quote. So let's just go ahead and play that here.
All right.
Excuse me, I'm just finishing up a speech for you, Mr. Spock. I rather enjoy writing. I don't get to do it very often in this job.
Perhaps you would be happier in another job.
It's a nice bit of comedy, but I also feel like there's a meta thing there. Where Data says to, or, you know, Brent Spiner says to Denise Crosby, maybe you'd be happier in another job. I feel like that must have been deliberate.
I think that whole thing, after you pointed that out that way, I think, you know, there has to be a story behind that where she corrected something, changed something, told a writer something.
Yeah. Oh, and so you want to be a writer, do you?
You want to be a writer, huh?
Yeah. And I don't know if
that
this really, show ever
and
did
is that.
That
kind of a FU, that is the
give
best.
Give me 10 minutes. Yeah.
I don't know if the show ever did that kind of thing, but I like to read that, and it made me happy.
Even better would be that they let it stay in, mm-hmm, and they made her deliver the line.
Right. Well, no, we'll cut this. It's fine. No, they won't. No, and that was, it's not exactly my bad thing. I'll get to that in a sec. But come on, you got Patrick Stewart and Brent Spiner who get to have scenes with Nimoy, and that's great. Those are the two most important guys, and you want to see that. But then Frakes and LeVar Burton and all those guys, nope, stay on the ship. The Quitter gets to have scenes with the iconic guy.
Yep.
Come on, she was there one season and she left. That's not fair.
Poor Geordi, never even got a chance.
Nope, never. Although he does get some good stuff with Scotty later, so that's
true.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, that guy walks into your workplace, you're going to let everybody get a picture with him.
Yeah, of course. All right, so my good thing... Oh, that is my good thing, sorry.
Yes.
I am all... Jesus Christ. I think it must be that the Sarek scene. I'm just so choked up and emotional about that I'm just...
So beautiful.
Yeah, it was. Okay, so my bad thing. The part two curse strikes again. Just incredible promise from part one. And I don't... I think people misinterpret me saying part one is great, part two sucks. That's not what I mean. What I mean when I say this is part one always promises some amazing thing, and part two is always less good than that. There's great stuff. There's a lot of good stuff there, but it's just not as good. You feel like we've been built up, and then, that was pretty good, I guess. Mm. But I felt that way about Best of Both Worlds. I felt that way about Redemption. I feel here, and there's some coming up like that. I just don't think they do part two as well as they do part one.
You know, you changed three things about, You changed three things about part two, and it's a fantastic episode completely.
Absolutely.
And you don't have this kind of, this kind of where you're thinking about it, thinking that it wasn't a great episode, because so much of it was perfect.
Oh, no, there are scenes that
it suffers under the premise. The payoff episode is going to be bad if the payoff isn't a payoff. If it's just everything seems like it didn't mean anything, makes no sense that in a society as conniving and as together as the Romulans, it does espionage and all that stuff so well, and just
it would never occur to anyone
that they would do this as their big plot.
Right.
And it doesn't make sense, and it doesn't, and all in the end, everybody just goes, eh.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where you feel like it's obvious it's going to work out in the end. They're not going to take over Vulcan. No way.
No.
You know, whereas if you created some kind of danger that was actually, they could have killed off Spock here.
Yeah.
That would have been very cool.
Why not? If they were.
That would have surprised the hell out of me.
If they were done making movies, and Nimoy's like, I want to go out on a high note, but I don't want to do it in a movie again. I already did that.
Yeah.
That would have thrown everybody for a loop. Just as a for instance, just as giving the danger a little more consequence. I don't necessarily think they should have done that, but they should have done something like that.
Yeah, but if Sela had killed Spock, how mad would you be?
Oh, Jesus. Well, the thing is, I'm not even going to talk about her. Everyone knows my problems. She is sort of a looming in the shadows. Meh-ha-ha, I'm going to destroy you all! And I don't like that.
I wish she sounded like Skeletor.
Yeah, me too. That would be so much better.
Spock!
But here's my real big problem. Star Trek VI wasn't even out at this point. This was a tie-in with it. It would be out in another month. So Ambassador Spock to us is a foreign concept. We don't know who Ambassador Spock is. The Spock we know is a science guy. He's Kirk's best friend, and he's a genius at science. We don't get any of that here. This guy could have been, apart from the Sarek stuff, which was amazing and very good, very grounded in character stuff, the plot about a defected Federation guy trying to make peace with the Romulans could have been any ambassador. There's nothing inherently Spock about that plot. And that makes me sad, because you have this great man, and when they bring Scotty in, it's engineering problems. And that is so much more suited to him. There is nothing science-y in this episode. I mean, Spock is the original science badass, which is a title now jointly held by Tony Stark and Bruce Banner in the Avengers movie. I expected so much more than running around in caves. Fucking Doctor Who time.
Did he poke something?
With a stick, yes.
Yes, exactly.
But there's nothing inherently Spock about anything beyond the Sarek stuff, and that was just very disappointing to me.
Does that make the little kid that keeps handing him stuff his companion?
Yes, everyone's companioning him stuff.
That's Ian.
Matt pointed out that when they're sitting in the soup bar, I think it was Matt who pointed that out. Someone gives him a flower, and then someone gives him a book, and that's, they just keep,
just keep handing him stuff.
Yeah, hey, take this. All right.
Oh, man, with the robes, it's a planet of Hare Krishnas.
Take this and go in peace. Leave me alone. There's a great line where Picard's just sort of being very Sarek-y and, just stubborn. And Spock says, you're almost as stubborn as another captain of the Enterprise I once knew. And
he says, Picard's, Bacula?
Bite your fucking tongue.
No, it was Pike.
Yes. But even if it was Pike, honestly, Picard just says, well, then I'm in good company, sir. And it's just such a nice little fanboy, not over the top, hey, Kirk, It's just like Picard knows the legacy. He knows, wow, really? I'm like that guy? Fucking awesome.
Yeah, it was understated enough. It was, a lot of times those things go heavier handed than that.
Yeah. No, it was perfect. Nice. But like I said, he could have even met Pike, because it's still the legacy of Enterprise captains. And he looks up to those guys as like, well, good. I'm part of that tradition. Those guys are great.
Yeah. That's why he's got the little ships.
Right. Which he won't break for a while, so that's good.
No. For now, they still remain in mint condition.
Right. Mint in package. Nerral, the proconsul, or no, excuse me, is he a senator at this point?
Proconsul?
He was a senator, yeah.
Yeah, no, he'll be proconsul in DS9 during the Dominion War.
But they kept calling him. Oh, or is he a guy in the proconsul's office? Is that what they say?
I think so. I don't know. Anyway,
they say proconsul a lot.
Maybe he's the... I don't know what
he is. I think he's the proconsul.
He's boss guy.
Maybe I'm misinterpreting what proconsul means.
Yeah, I think he's a proconsul.
Right. Whereas in DS9, he's their leader.
Yeah.
It's a nice bit of continuity where we see him in a lower office, and then we see him as, you know, as the leader, which is nice.
Yes.
Of course, Beav, you mentioned Worf and his Klingon opera.
I love that scene so much. He is so passionate about that.
Yeah, he is. And we've mentioned that we start to see Worf being a square.
Yes.
He's into opera, and he just
all misty-eyed.
He doesn't like to fight when all the other Klingons are fighting. He wants to work on his homework. But I actually kind of like the sound of the Klingon opera. I thought it sounded...
Yeah, no, it sounded really good.
It sounded like opera, and it sounded a little exotic. And
she sounded good singing it.
Yeah. That was a fun scene, because he gets that gleam in his eye. He's like, yes.
Now we're talking.
Yeah. That's my jam.
Yeah.
We witnessed a Klingon opera boner right there. I know that look.
Yes.
We had Galorned and Kor.
Galorned and Kor.
Galorned and Kor.
Which is a great
home
name.
Of lore.
That was another nice callback, though. There was a lot of callbacks without it being heavy-handed.
We all wrote that in caps in our notes.
Yep.
Yep.
I couldn't even remember what the reference was, but I knew it was a reference. And it's one of those things like Galorned and Kor and Kittimer Outpost and blah, blah, blah. You know, the thousand things that are always brought up.
I was once told by a teacher, and this ended up being completely true, if someone says something to you in a silly voice, you are way more likely to remember it.
That's true.
And because we said Galorned and Kor in our stupid Noonie and Soong voices, you remembered it.
If I thought about it, I would go back to elementary school and just do all of my...
Well, no, it doesn't work if you do
that one.
All
I remember in a, that one. I actually remember in a Picard voice for whatever reason.
It was, I believe, that was the one where Geordi was stuck on the planet with the Romulan, and they had to help each other out.
Ah, okay.
The alien enemy mine, except on Galorned and Kor.
Galorned and Kor.
Right. We talked about how terrible Sela is. Oh,
at length.
Yeah, but we did that before. I feel like we're kind of repeating ourselves at this point.
After this, we'll never have to see her again. Yeah. So
it's just Denise Crosby is not up to the huge villain that they've written her as. Is really like putting aside her backstory, which we're done with.
Yeah,
she's here now. Let's deal with that. She's still just not a great villain. Like, you're facing off against fucking Spock. We need somebody great. We need somebody just that could outwit him, or at least we believe could outwit him.
And you need no to chance. Have actually outwitted him for a minute.
Yeah. Right.
And then he
it
wins.
It would have actually been awesome if they'd brought back an old original series Romulan.
Ooh. The female Romulan commander.
That would have rocked.
Because then they have the history of him seducing her. And she's been bitter all these years.
Yeah.
We're just rewriting this episode, aren't we?
I think it would have even been better if Pardek had thought he was doing something for real.
Yeah,
but they
and then
used
they would
that
have tricked
before
him.
With the was it the Klingon guy that they did that with, where he thought he was defecting, but really they had planned.
Oh
given
no, that
him,
was the defector.
No, that was a Romulan one too.
Yeah, that was a Romulan.
Yeah, where they did that before. Otherwise, that would have at least made it so there was some sincerity and that would have fooled Spock and he
and
might have
betrayal.
Actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but they were all in on it. And it just
but really all the good guys at one point or another, all the good guys say, it's probably a trap. We'll be fine.
Well, Spock does have a great sort of Kirkish, you know, well, it's probably a trap, but I'm going to have to spring the trap.
I'm
going
to
have
to spring it anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. If this is real, you want me to be here. If this is a fake, you want me to be here.
Right.
Yeah.
It was that was a very good line.
We talked about this, how old Spock, and I think they handled this better in the movie, but old Spock has clearly had 100 years to think over all the stuff that Kirk and Bones were trying to teach him. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of come to terms with, okay, I'm half human. You know what? It's okay to feel stuff sometimes. And it's okay to take ridiculous chances sometimes. And just, he's finally come to terms with, I have some of those Kirk qualities in myself. I'm gonna leap before looking. Fuck it. It works for Jim. Let's just do this. It doesn't always work for Spock.
No.
But it's nice that they've sort of tried to write him like that. Which is good. But of course, nothing comes of all of this. Romulus just explodes in 20 years, and that's that.
So good work, everyone.
Yeah. The thing where they were trying to fool the Vulcans with a hologram of Spock, just really okay.
This is not a good plan. We can make a hologram at home. We have Captain Picard voice technology.
Oh yeah,
we can figure this
go
out.
Go borrow that box from Wesley and.
Yeah, he's not using it anymore.
I thought having Tupac in the background was going a little too far.
Yeah, but he just
which
says
does
going,
sound like it, which is a. That's a Vulcan name too, isn't it?
Oh, Tupac, it totally is. Just T apostrophe P A C.
Yep.
But I feel like he's just standing in the background going, uh-huh, yeah, uh-huh. That's actually Padiddy, but
Padiddy.
I think that joke works. But really, the Vulcans are supposed to be super smart. Mm-hmm. You think they wouldn't figure out it's a hologram, really? We can spot CG a mile away now.
I don't think it's a good plan.
No, it's really not. And the more we poke at it, the more we realize, oh, this is terrible.
Yeah.
They didn't think this out very well at all.
No.
Yeah, but just a handful of little changes, and it's all great, and we don't have an issue with it.
No. So ultimately, I think on a character level, these episodes really, really work.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of characters get good stuff to do. Spock has a nice connection to Picard because of his father. Mm-hmm. Data and Spock get some nice back and forth. You know, oh, so you want to be human, huh? I don't want to be human. That was great. And Riker gets some great stuff, but story-wise, ugh, not good.
Ugh.
So, any further business?
I think that's it.
Very well. Well, overall, I'd say these are, you know, definitely worth watching. But
absolutely.
There are some problems. Of course, we've been working on the episode guide, and I feel like I'm always wrapping these up with, should you watch it? You know what? Should you watch it?
Yes.
Read the episode guide and find out.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That is not a feature of the podcast. You have to check out the book for that. Speaking of that, you can buy the episode guide. It is on postatomichorror.com.
Yes, and please do.
Yes. The new one will be coming out. We'll be launching it for Emerald City in March.
Mm-hmm.
So look forward to that. And next week, we will... I have no idea what we're doing. I don't have the list in front of me, but I'm sure we're doing two episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation.
It will be enchanting.
It will. Beef, as always, thank you. I'm sure we'll have you back soon, because you were a delight.
Yep. I was.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, you were.
Yes. You have been and always shall be a delight. All right, Matt, take us out.
All right. See ya.
Folks. Oh.
The Post-Atomic Horror Podcast is a co-production of Ron Algar Watt and Matt Robotham, copyright 2012. Please don't sue us. We're just doing this for fun.